All right, everyone, let's do this. Welcome to this week's episode of our podcast, Is Breakfast Included? This week, I sit down with my good friend, Connor Hickey. Connor is a production manager, stage manager, guitar tech. He does it all. And that's kind of what I wanted to sit down and talk to him about. But it went a whole different way. This is just a conversation between two guys who like a lot of really cool shit. And I really appreciated the way it turned out. Anyway, we talk about how Connor and I met, and it's a really cool story. All right, I'm going to let you listen. Let's check it out.
Well, cool. I'm going to start it off. You got to tell everyone who you are.
Hey, I'm Connor. Connor Hickey. Live in Queens. Known Bernie now for a few years. I work in live music, live production. I've been doing that for over 10 years now. Grew up here. I grew up on Long Island.
New York?
Yeah, yeah. I grew up on Long Island. I've been living in the city for, you know, a better part of my adult life, working in the city, in and out of construction, warehouses, landscaping, all the typical uneducated blue-collar kind of shit, you know? And then, actually, the recession, or 2008, like when everything went haywire with the housing crisis, I was working in a warehouse. I had just gotten out of construction, and someone put me on to working at Irving Plaza and sweeping up cigarettes and fucking, you know, taking out the garbage and cleaning up vomit. And that's how I got started.
All right.
Yeah.
That's how you got started in this?
Yeah.
In this business?
Mm-hmm.
All right, man. What's the difference between like you being a New Yorker and then the New Yorkers I see in Manhattan? You know, because you live out in Queens, right?
Well, So I live in Queens. If we're gonna get down like this, I grew up on Long Island.
Okay.
So there's plenty of New Yorkers that don't consider me a New Yorker.
Okay.
Right. So like full, and I get it up front. You know what I mean? I understand. But I've been living and working in the city most of my life, and I don't know the difference between me and someone that lives in Manhattan, like what, the Upper West Side or something.
Yeah.
I mean, a couple commas and a few zeros.
Right.
But yeah, I mean those people don't live on planet Earth. Yeah. They, you know, they're in a different.
Yeah.
Those people are in a different universe. I just had a conversation with my buddy this morning about people like this. He's working for he's a painter, and he's working for someone that owns like 20 buildings in Manhattan, like a real estate, like hedge fund. They're just world destroyers. You know, it's just world destroyer level money. So
do you watch Succession?
I did. I just started watching it.
So and we watched that, and I think like it's such a good show, but it's really just taking the piss out of those people.
It really is taking the piss. And like the other thing I really like about it is they hint at like redeeming qualities in them, but there are none.
None.
Every one of those the children of the, you know, the main characters, and there is not one. They're all awful. Awful people. They're just the worst people through and through, and they consistently get worse and worse. Yeah. And I appreciate that, because not for nothing, I truly believe that those people are that evil.
Yeah.
To be on that level and to be, I don't know, the stratospheric wealth and that kind of power, what comes along with just psychopathy comes along with that. It's just the two are intertwined. You can't get rid of the two are just a handshake.
Yeah. So, right, I mean, you and I met 2015,
yeah,
Fold Fest.
Yes, right, yeah.
We spent the day kind of on the same side of the stage.
Yeah,
talking.
Yeah, it was a Nile Rodgers Chic Festival, right?
Out on Long Island. And we were playing that. I think that day was, you were there both days. I think
I was there both days because I was with Chic. I was teching for Nile Rodgers that day, which was
so.
I don't know how I landed in that, but like typical for my situation, I'll get thrown into some shit and I'll wind up being a guitar tech for Nile Rodgers and carrying Hitmaker around on my back the whole day, which was like, you know, the God's honest truth is like I had to fucking Google the guitar, you know what I mean? Figure out how important this guitar was that I was walking around with on my back in a field on Long Island, you know?
Yeah, I know his tech real well, the guy that tours with him now, and he's like, yeah, when we toured, it's Dick gets his own seat on the plane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I know. And But that was a good day. I mean, I can't remember how I think someone was getting in your space or getting in our space. And
I think you came up and said, I asked you, I was like, hey, is this you? And it was that respect about real estate. And then we just started talking.
That was it. Is it just a respect? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing about being
on
stage.
We exchanged numbers. Yeah. And we went our separate ways, and then about maybe a year and a half later, I was on this gig. You were with XA.
Yep.
And I just showed up at this gig and everyone had told me, or everyone on the crew had told me, like, you're our fucking 10th guitar tech. And I was really nervous. And you came up, you go, hey, man. And I was so happy to see someone I knew. And I said, dude, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Like, they're gonna throw me off this gig. And you're like, they do, man. Like, you go home. Don't worry about it.
You told me that story again a couple months ago. And I laugh and I get a kick out of it because I'm glad that helped and I'm glad yeah. that I said that to you. But like, there's no way that would have consoled me.
No, it's like, fuck, it's like, he's right. Like, if, yeah. if they fire me, they fire me. I did everything I could. And in all honesty, at the end, I only did like 2 weeks with him. And at the end of that gig, the guy came up and he said, hey, you know, I want to offer you the gig.
Nice.
And it was just too much. The guy was great. A guy named Billy Norris. Real right, sweet guy, yeah. great guitar player, but it just wasn't my scene. And but it was, to me, it was really a good thing that he came up, because I remember his first words to me were like, are you my guitar tech this week? And then at the end of that, he's like, man, I want you to come out.
I want
the
you
room.
To be my guitar tech this month.
Yeah. Yeah. I want you to stay on for the whole month. But yeah, man. That helped out a lot. And then we just kept in touch. And I think we just kept running into each other.
Yeah, it's just, yeah.
You moved out to LA.
Briefly,
I ran into you out there.
Yeah. And then you're out here now.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's easy to stay close to good people. It's also easy to gravitate towards the good people in this thing. Because
I think so, man. I think that's the most important thing about this. Like we said, like at Foldfest, it wasn't a matter of like, oh, we're the headliner. I need to be over here. It's like, how much room do you need?
Right.
And then I'll work around you.
Yeah. And it just, it only has to be that simple every time, you know, and I'm guilty of forgetting it and getting in my own way with that shit. But like, it only has to be that simple every exchange. And that's, I said I wasn't going to talk about work, but that's kind of what like.
I always lead into it.
Listen, I seen it coming. I know. But that's what I think the detachment from the detachment from the personal side of people in our business is what like kind of has been driving me. It's been getting to me more and more, you know, since the pandemic and since COVID, the way it came back like that. And it was like, all right, the light switch is on. You guys are all going to work. Hey, shouldn't we be happy? Like, it was like a whiplash reaction to something that was already a dramatic decision to like a profound experience going on, you know, like what we went through in the industry in 2020. And I'm not trying to be overly dramatic. Listen, millions of people were affected in a way far worse than me and you and a lot of people and most of the people I know, and that's the truth of it. But the way that it went down and the way that the problem for me is the way that industry and the way that economy and the way that government decided to snap their fingers and turn the world off was a necessary reaction to something that the world wasn't prepared for.
Exactly.
But I don't think that you get to you don't get to have the same whiplash reaction and turning it back on. If the reaction comes that swiftly, it's obviously something you weren't prepared for. We had plenty of time to prepare for turning this back on. And I'm talking about specifically in our industry.
Yeah, yeah.
But we didn't do that collectively. The industry didn't do that because they were so worried about making money and sustaining the economics of it. During it, no one thought about the human impact of what happens when we go to do this again.
Yeah.
And I'm only starting to come to terms with what that all looked like and felt like for me over the last 2.5 years or whatever it is. And look, at the end of the day, it's all manageable shit, right? It's just fucking bullshit. We're not saving lives. We're putting on rock shows or rap shows. But I think I have less tolerance for bullshit as a result. I think that's the summation of my experience for the last 3 years and coming back and doing it and like feeling out of sorts and not feeling like myself, is that I have less patience for bullshit that I used to before the pandemic.
Yeah.
And like we said earlier, right? Like I said no to something.
Yeah.
I didn't do that before. Now
we took everything.
You know, yeah. Like the reason I always got called and still get called is because I always say yes.
Yes.
Always said yes.
Yeah.
It's been like a concerted decision for me to not do that anymore.
Yeah.
Because like my quality of life matters. And I've seen how it's going out there and the disregard for us as people. You know, look, man, at the end of the day, I know what I do is a daily thing, right? Like I'm freelance, this, that, and the other, but slap on the back, couldn't have done it without you. Moving on to the next one is basically what you get at the end.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I agree, man. Coming out of this, like you said, the snap of the finger, like, let's bring it all back. I saw ticket prices go up. I saw guarantees go up. I saw all kinds of shit go up. But you know what didn't go up?
Yeah. Yeah, my pay didn't go up either.
Yeah. So that, you know, yeah. But I 100% agree with everything you said. Like, I don't say yes to everything that gets offered. You know, I may agree to it. I always say, you know, well, number one, I mean, what does it pay? Number one, what does it pay?
Yeah.
Number two, show me confirmed dates. Yeah, you know? Yeah. Number three, I'll think about it now.
Yeah, and that's fair.
You know?
And for a long time, I didn't approach anything like that because I operated under this, like, this idea that I needed to be grateful for every opportunity. And I am, and I do, and I continue to do that. But that needs to be measured.
Yeah.
With, you know, the reality that, like, you're bringing something to the table that's needed here.
Yeah.
You know, and when you've been doing it for a little while and you're good at it and people rely on your level of responsibility and, like, your level of expertise or the level of efficiency, that's worth something, you know? And there's a reason that they're calling you. These people act like it's a business. Why don't I act like it's a business?
Exactly.
But I don't operate that way.
Right? Yeah.
My machine, the machine up here doesn't operate that way. And I don't want to change that, honestly. Like, I don't want to operate like a machine and be ones and zeros and black and white. You know what I mean? Like, that's not what attracted me to music to begin with. So if I have to deal with that, if the solution to all that bullshit is me removing myself a little bit for some sanity, there it is.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Like I was telling you earlier, you know, we just got back from the UK and it's the smoothest tour I've ever been on, you know, because I think we had people come in that understood what you and I are talking about, and they're like, we're gonna make it better. I gotta make it comfortable for this crew. I gotta make sure that they're taken care of and not just look at it like, oh, those are the cats that put on the show for the we're gonna take care of everyone else.
That's a whole and it's like we had said it's such a huge difference that like if you're not in it, you can't notice it.
Yeah.
And the Do you keep stuff and not, you don't keep anonymous on this, right? Who you work with or who you work for?
No,
do you? No. So the camp I work with, Run the Jewels now, and that's really the only camp that I want to work with out on the road because of the way that it operates and the way that it flows and the way that it moves.
Yeah.
You know, it works for me. It's comfortable, and I'm not trying to jump out and say yes to everything and fill it in. You know, I'm fortunate in that I don't have to. Right.
Yeah.
That's a big part of that. Like, I don't have to at this point because I live in a town where, you know, I can find local work.
Yeah.
But, The stuff, the intangibles of the camp, they matter a lot more to me than they ever did.
Exactly, man. Like, after last summer, and I've been with this organization, everyone knows who I work for a long time, going on 13 years. Yeah. Now, the guys at the very top, they treat me like a human being, you know? We've run across production people who don't.
Mm-hmm,
you know, so
mm-hmm,
you mm-hmm. know your worth up here.
Yeah.
And if these people don't treat you like that, like I said, we are now in a position, or not in a position, we're now in a situation where we have a crew, a production team that looks at us and sees our worth.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, the last summer I almost walked.
Right. No, I remember and even in November when I saw you out in LA at the gig.
I think I vented to you.
Yeah, totally. And I can tell, you know, I mean, where you're at. But that's a... something is definitely askew if middle management, if the guy on the top of the mountain treats you more like a person than middle management, something is definitely askew.
I know, right? I hate to be that guy that's like, all right, I'll just ask John.
They don't realize, you know what I mean? You know. And that's like a unique thing about, I don't do the backline tech stuff as much. Like, I'm not as much of a guitar tech these days, one-on-one with a guy. But that is... one thing that even people in production, I think, don't realize about the unique relationship we have with the band and the musicians, like the one-on-one level, you know, because I think I'd run into like new people on a production crew or new assistants or whatever. And then, you know, they don't understand that direct line, you know, is built, that relationship is built over years and years of trust on a stage. You know what I mean? Like that's, I've seen you interact.
Yeah. We've had a cat. We had a cat in this organization at one point. I won't say any names.
Yeah.
But I had to tell him, like, man, it doesn't matter who you put over there. He's going to want that number and he's going to call that person directly, whether it be me or someone else. Like,
That's what he wants.
That's how he likes to work.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter, you know, like,
yeah.
I always say, like, you're my fifth one that I've seen here. Like, Keep them coming.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not saying that I'm untouchable. I'm just saying that,
we're all expendable. Everything's got an expiration date, man.
But it's you know. Oh, man, I talked to this girl named Paris. She's a photographer. And we had this idea we were going to have. We had this really joking idea of a show called Roadies Are Terrible or Terrible Roadies or something. How do you feel about guys when you're on the road and you run across guys? We won't mention any names, yeah, but yeah, like the cat we talked about earlier, like that somehow they don't have the etiquette. I think that's the word we use, the road etiquette, like how they treat other people.
Yeah. Look, you're gonna send me down. So again, again, though, I will start by.
We'll move on to the horror movies in a minute.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, after this.
I might need to smoke a butt after this. Again, let me start by saying, like, look, I have my bad days. I have a lot of bad days, you know. Yeah. Like, being out there doing that thing is not easy all the time. Some days are great, and as my good friend of mine says, the highs are high, the lows are low.
Yeah.
But, so look, I've had my moments, and I'm not great to everyone all the time, but I try, you know, and I try and make it right if I do. But that comes from years of experience and practice, too, so I got to remember it took me a while. But I will say that... treating people with respect and common decency is just bar none the first thing out the gate. You know, the first tour I did where I stage managed large local crews and in arenas, I was nervous, man. I was anxious, tense, and probably not like as cordial and polite as I should have been all the time is the truth of it. You know what I mean? Like, I tried to stay on it, but like, I'm sure that I wasn't. But I do remember at a certain point, Like a crew say to me, 40, 50 local hands or whatever, just being like, listen, it'll get loud and it'll get fast and everything, but I want you guys all to know, please and thank you are implied. And if I yell, it's not personal, it's just for volume and it's just for efficiency. And I think at the end of the day, even if I fall short, it's really important to get across in a human way, like what's going on. And that'll like, it certainly doesn't absolve people of shitty behavior, but if you can connect with someone on a human level, they can understand where you're at and they can get it done and you can communicate and just accomplish things faster. Yeah. And I found, like, even though I can't get out of my own way with my own anger, anxiety, or whatever it is, if I can at least be decent and be like person to person with them, that accomplishes a lot. Yeah. It bridges that gap. It gets me out of my own shit.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of guys and ladies and people, et cetera, in our business that, you know, they're obsessed. They're self-obsessed. It's an ego-driven business. You know, it's a business that involves, you know, Yuji goes on stage collaborating in order to make one giant thing happen, et cetera, et cetera. I think a lot of that ego trickles down. And I think people move in and they think that, you know, this is my spot. This is my shit. And there's ownership. And look, there's good and bad to that too, because you don't take pride in something if you don't have ownership over it, or you're less likely to. But
there's got to be room for compromise.
Yeah, I mean, audio crews fighting with lighting crews, fighting with video crews. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, dude, we're all on the same team here.
And everybody shits on backline.
That's why I don't even mention it. That's why I don't even mention it, man. Everyone shits on. So it's like, thanks, guys. But, you know, I don't know if you noticed, the musicians are playing this shit.
Right.
The guys that are writing your checks.
No one goes home humming the lights.
I say that all the time. I'm sorry, Griff.
Yeah. Sorry, Vince. So you mentioned something, your anger and your anxiety kind of gets the best of you sometimes. That's something you had before the music business?
It's something I've had for 41 years going now.
Is it something you've been working on?
I've been working on that my whole life.
If you don't want to talk about it,
no, it's the tone changed quick, didn't it? I'm happy to. Anxiety is a big part of my life. I deal with it in a significant way just about every day. And it's ironic that I'm in the profession that I'm in, because on paper, it couldn't be worse of a gig.
Yeah.
You know, again, lives don't matter and all that, but people love to convince you that they do or act like they do. And when there's 20,000 people waiting for your go on a comm for the fucking lights and everything, like, yeah, it can be, you know, intense, but I think that's also the reason we all do it.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like my anxiety and its chronicness is weirdly, I've said this to people before, like, I have more anxiety ordering this cup of coffee and having exact change or being able to not fumble with shit out of my pocket than I do on a stage in front of 20,000 people. Because that's like surreal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's a surreal experience that there's, it's almost like I'm out of touch of reality, and it's easier to focus on like specific tasks at hand. Mm. I'm ordering a cup of coffee, like I'm listening to the bus brakes, I'm listening to the conversation behind me. It's all getting in, and I can't filter it all out, and my brain will just start to go overload. You know,
tend to be an overthinker.
You'd say so, yeah. Which is one way of putting it.
I don't think I'm an overthinker, but I can relate to everything else you're saying. Like, you know, like there was a time in my life when I wouldn't even leave the house to go to the convenience store because I started thinking, ah, the fucking neighbor's going to talk to me. And, you know, it's just a block away. I'm walking up there. What if a dog barks at me? And we got to run.
Just this morning, I smoke a lot of cigarettes, and just this morning, I don't smoke in my apartment. And just this morning, I was like, I popped outside to smoke a butt. I came inside, and I was like, oh, I'm going to go out again. And I noticed my neighbor was out there when I was coming in. I'm like, I like this guy. But I didn't, I'm like checking out the window to make sure he's not out there, because I just don't want to, I don't want to talk to someone. Yeah. I like this guy. Yeah. I genuinely like him. I want to be alone. You know? Like, that's, the anger, the anxiety and stuff like that, and the world at large, is just, yeah, it's all nonstop. It's all neon. It's all fucking, you know, on 110 all the time.
But as far as the I don't know if I'm an overthinker. I showed you my desk in there. Like, I definitely live in chaos, but I like to think of it's a controlled chaos, you know, which is resembles where I work too.
Well, I was, when you say controlled chaos, that's what we do.
Right.
I mean, have you ever, Exhibit A, any loadout.
Yeah, right.
You know, like this just to a layperson or an earthling looking at a Duran Duran loadout, I'm sure they would just, how the fuck does anything get where it needs to go?
Yeah.
You know, but an hour and a half later or whatever it is, it's all packed up in 6 or 7 trucks and on its way to Louisville or wherever the fuck it's got to go.
You know?
It's just controlled chaos.
I was talking to a friend earlier. She actually helps me do this podcast, and she's coming to a couple of shows. She's like, you know, we're going to go to Seattle, and then we got to get up in the morning and drive to Portland and then do that. She's like, it's hard. And I'm like, it is, yeah. Like, it is hard, right? Try putting up a show in those times too.
Yeah, it is hard.
She starts laughing. We're gonna think about that.
Yeah, we're gonna put a small town in a bunch of trucks, and we're gonna ship it with you, and you're gonna erect that small town everywhere you go.
But it was a funny conversation. Man, let's move on. Let's move on to another topic: horror movies.
Yeah,
you and I, dude. I think literally, I always say this. I always think universe puts people in your path. And keeps them there, and whether or not you want, like, you see each other every day, you continue to run into those people or communicate with them. And once you and I, when I moved here, we hung out, like, we realized, like, dude, we have, this is
far
why.
More in common this than we realized. Yeah, exactly.
You know, we love horror movies. We love stoner rock.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, check horror movies, stoner rock, sci-fi.
Yeah.
You know,
you know, what's the first movie that you got into that really turned you on to this?
Horror. So when I think of Sleepaway Camp 2.
Really?
Yeah. Sleepaway Camp 2 fucked me up. And I will never... So there was other movies like that left a mark and like got me, like sunk their teeth in me. Friday the 13th was a big one for me.
Yeah, Friday the 13th.
Those were big ones. But Sleepaway Camp 2 is a great story. My ex-girlfriend, Crystal, and I were obsessed with horror movies when we were teenagers.
Yeah.
And we would just get really baked and, you know, go to the video rental store and, you know, VHS, whatever. And remember, just the ending scene of that. Have you seen it? You know, Sleepaway Camp? So you know the ending scene, right?
Yes,
so the ending scene. Like, I don't know if I was just, like, 15 years old, babe in the woods, like, you know what I mean, naive to the world at large or whatever it was, and probably fucking way too stoned. But I remember that scene coming on, and the way it's shot, it's stuck.
Yeah.
Right? Like the image of the child.
Yo.
So that I was just hooked. The way that something could like sink in like that deep to me. And the other one, so horror and sci-fi run parallel tracks for me. Now that I'm thinking about ones that really left mark was Fire in the Sky.
It's the Travis Walton story.
Yeah, exactly. Travis Walton UFO story. That movie too, like, and knowing that was based on a true story at the time, and the Communion had been popular around that time with Whitley Strieber's The Communion and Christopher Walken. So like it was around seeing a lot of it. So that launched a lifelong capital O obsession with UFOs and aliens. So like
likewise, man, Fire in the Sky to me was at the time. You know, I wasn't a cool kid in school.
Nor was I.
And you say,
I would
like,
be what
oh,
you would
I
call the opposite of a
UFOs,
cool kid.
You know, that's how you get beat up a lot. You
yeah,
know?
Man. Yeah, dude.
You know?
Bro, totally. So that Fire in the Sky, the Travis Walton story, and then I'm a huge X-Files fan
yeah.
as well. Obsessed. And I didn't realize, but I saw the first episode when it aired. The pilot episode aired in, I think it's 93, fall of 92 or fall of 93. And I watched it and didn't know what it was at the time.
And of X-Files.
Yeah. The first episode, when it was on, happened to catch it on TV, like missed the opening credits and like didn't know, but was scared to fucking death.
Right.
And was obsessed with it. Didn't know until years later when I had seen it on a rerun. Oh, this is the show that I'm still obsessed with, you know. But it all sort of came full circle with those two moments when I was a kid for me and UFOs.
Yeah, same. Like when Fire in the Sky came out, to me, I was too young to realize what I'm about to say, but it's like a redemption to be like, see, see, it does happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it does happen.
Well, I've been on that like, we could go down a hole. I mean, basically every morning, like my routine on a day off is like, lately anyway, Coast to Coast, George Nori or George Knapp, you know, some of the old Art Bell ones, but they do like Spotify does like a Coast to Coast best of.
Yeah.
So I'll just throw that on for 20 minutes while I'm making my coffee. And
yeah, my kid will send me links. It's like, you got to listen to this. I'm going to tell you this story and you might find it funny. I remember when this happened and it wasn't that long ago. I used to live in Dallas, but I would go see my mom occasionally. I'd go visit her and I'd spend the night and I used to pull into her driveway and I'd block her in and I fell asleep, woke up the next morning. She's gone. Her car's not moved. Her car hasn't moved. I'm looking for her all over the house. I go out. Maybe she fell down. Maybe she's out there. I'm freaking out. And then for a split second, I'm thinking, holy shit, she got abducted. Mm-hmm. Like it really went through my head. And then the next thought was I was pissed because like she's not even gonna appreciate
she got it, not me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why can't she appreciate that shit? It, about 2 hours later she walks up, she's like, I decided to walk to work.
You're on your way to Jupiter.
Rather than me thinking, well, maybe she walked to work, I'm thinking she got abducted. Number two, she don't even appreciate
and
what
I'm
happened.
Pissed. And I'm pissed now because I'm not an interdimensional trip. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's I tell very few people that story. That's now I've told everybody that's going to listen.
That's a great one.
But no, man, I'm the same way. I guess the movie that really, well, I mean, The Exorcist, I saw it I saw it early in life, which really fucked me up. And what's really sad is several years later, I showed it to my son. I was like, dude, this movie's really going to, and he was like, it ain't that bad. And I'm thinking, what is out there right now, that this didn't mess you up?
Yeah, so The Exorcist was a big one for me when I was a kid. The Omen.
The Omen,
like,
dude.
Yeah, those like classic 70s like American, like there was like a stable of like good classic dark American. I'm trying to think of another one that falls in with those, like The Exorcist, The Omen,
The Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Like Carrie, even.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, like but yeah, those are all staples growing up. But for me, a big thing was to USA, Channel 7. It was Channel 17 in New York or on Long Island growing up. The USA used to do Up All Night.
Yeah.
I think it was Saturday nights or something, and it was Gilbert Gottfried used to host it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that was my shit. Me and my sister would stay up, and we'd watch. They would do, like, Friday the 13th. They'd do, like, 1 through 4 every night, like, one night. Or I think they did The Nightmares, too. You know what I mean? So it was shit like that. But that got me into, like, the irreverence of it. You know, so I really started to get into like the creep shows.
Yeah, creep show, you know, Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah,
that kind of
like
shit.
This sort of ridiculous Motel Hell. I watched that again during the pandemic. Hadn't seen that. Like Street Trash. You know what I mean? Like those, just like the
Killer Clowns.
Shit. Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. I get it. It's campy, but it's still, man.
It's to me, it's like perfectly irreverent and like also like subversive enough, right? Because that's the whole point of it. It's all subversive.
Yeah. Another one that got me was Amityville Horror.
Yeah.
Like, is it Long Island?
I grew up about probably 15 minutes from that house.
Really? Is it still there?
You know, I'm sure we went to see it when we were kids. I know they changed the address. I think they changed the name of the street and they changed
because of all that?
Yeah, there was a lot of like touristy like people cruising or whatever. There was another house, though, in Massapequa that was like we used to cruise by that was like this weird gothic architectural thing in the middle of suburbia. Like just totally like random. That was always a little more of interest to me than
I always wanted to go to the Warren Museum in Connecticut.
Oh, is that real?
It is real. They actually just shut their doors either before or during the pandemic because Lorraine Warren died.
This is the Conjuring couple,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. They were the demonologists.
Yeah, right, right.
But yeah, they had the museum there.
Really?
And I don't know where half of that stuff went.
Bless you.
That's our in-house producer sneezing. But, you know, that's the kind of stuff. I was really into the supernatural part of it. Even recent movies like that M. Night movie, Devil.
Didn't see it.
It's really cool. Yeah. Concept.
I like the Shyamalan twists.
Yeah.
What was the one I watched? Old? Was that him?
Old was cool. Yeah. But Devil had, to me, was growing up the way we grew up. We grew up very religious. We grew up, you know, in the Mexican culture, like the supernatural was real strong. La Llorona. Shit like that.
What's Llorona?
Is a woman who drowned her babies and you hear her crying for her kids in the middle of the night.
For real?
Yeah, they made a real campy movie. James Wan did it, the guy that did The Conjuring and all that. But it's a Mexican folklore. The movie's okay, but if you read into that history,
that sounds fat. I want to read more.
That's the kind
about
of shit
that, yeah.
Our parents scared us with, and it was all real to us.
Right.
You know, we grew up believing it. So when you talk to people about it, they think you're crazy.
What else is there like that?
Well, Chupacabra.
Right, yeah.
That kind of shit. But that was the big one, La Llorona. Maybe the crying one.
How do I say it again?
La Llorona.
La Llorona.
Yeah.
That's a dope story, though.
Yeah. I'll send you some.
Send me, definitely. That's right in my wheelhouse. It reminds me of, I mean, this is where my fucked up brain goes. But in the 90s, it was that woman that drove her kids into the lake. And
oh,
she
yeah.
Drowned her
yeah,
kids
yeah,
in
yeah.
car.
Yeah.
But, so it's like that. She killed her own kids. Killed and she hears kids. The scream of her yeah. kids. That's...
Yeah,
that's dark, man.
That's true.
That's what I'm. Yeah, yeah, no, yeah, but that's yeah. like that's the yeah. That's essentially yeah. the same idea,
and this,
right?
Yeah, this happened supposedly happened years ago, but you know we would go visit family in Mexico, and it's real big. Brujerías, which is like witches.
Well, I know the band Brujerías.
The band Brujerías. Yeah. When I heard yeah, yeah. that band, I thought the name was so cool.
Yeah, of course.
Because
I didn't know what it meant forever.
Yeah, but that's what it is, like witchcraft.
Cool.
That kind of shit. That's a, you know, when old country Mexican women or men talk about it, they talk about evil. They mention like la brujería of it. Like right, it's the right, evil, right. evil. And so there's a lot of that goes on. A lot of, you know.
Does that tie into what religion did you grow up? You said you grew up really religious.
Well, I know we were Catholic for a second, but then We were raised Southern Baptist.
Okay.
Which, you know, being in Texas, the Bible Belt. We grew up in the Bible Belt. Like, you know, there's about 18 fucking religions.
Yeah, I can't keep track. Yeah. Yeah. I grew up Catholic too. So.
But, you know, I had a lot of friends that were. I took all the Catholic holidays off at school because yeah, they right. assumed you're Mexican. You're gonna,
but how you're does Catholic. That. How does the those like, those more like macabre, like, do they dovetail in with the Catholicism when you're growing up, or do they kind of separate?
It was separate. More another one, El Cucuy, which is the boogeyman uh-huh. in English. That's what you were told when you were a kid, like go to bed or El Cucuy is going to come get you. And that kind of shit scared you. And I didn't realize the tie-ins to the American folklore, mm-hmm. you know, like the boogeyman and... which all these, by the way, would make amazing band names.
Yeah,
as totally. Yeah. Brujería.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Which is definitely probably the best one.
Yeah, right. But yeah, so that kind of stuff. When we would watch like The Exorcist or anything having to do with the devil,
gotcha.
Really yeah. hit home.
Yeah.
With Mexican kids.
That's interesting because I've seen that in like different like Mexican friends.
Yeah.
And there is always like it hits a different note. And that's why.
Yeah.
I never because really
we're raised yeah, like it's, right. you know. And I'm sure like, it's not just the Mexicans, like Latinos have all different, you have Dominicans, you have Puerto Ricans, but Mexicans, man, they have the most, in San Antonio, which is predominantly Mexico, there's a railroad track and I can't think of the name, but they say you go at night, you park your car, you put it in neutral and supposedly a bus full of kids got killed on that railroad track. And so they push you over. And if you put like flour or something, when you get out of the car, you see all the little handprints.
Oh, shit.
I've never done it, But my cousin said he's done it. My cousin, you know, that kind of shit.
I love that dude.
So the closer you get to the border, the more that's prominent that
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's a corollary in Ireland or with like Irish American.
I'm sure there is.
Like, I don't think it's a direct line. I'm sure it'll come to me like some weird like cultural thing my parents brought over that. I mean, yeah, just a lot of guilt and shame, really. That they'd still, but like, because people talk about Ireland and the fairies and the, you know what I mean, yeah. and the banshees and shit. Yeah. But like, the honest truth is, like, by the time my parents immigrated, well, yeah, none of that shit was. My mother certainly wasn't bringing any stories about banshees and fairies over from Ballymun,
old country.
Know? Yeah,
like my mom, you know, my parents. We were raised, and then my grandmother came over. It was all about, you know, the brujeria. It's unclean, and they do like things if you walk in and say like a baby's cute, then you got to go and put an egg on his
right,
eye. That kind of
shit. Yeah, yeah. So we don't kill.
Malojo is what they call it. Which is another cool band
name.
Yeah,
that is. That's great.
Means like the evil eye.
Yeah. Well, that's also Dio's thing. Came from something with his grandmother.
His grandmother would throw out the evil.
But she called it something similar. Yeah. Maloka or something. Didn't she?
Yeah. You're right. She did call it.
It
that's
had
where
like
he
a
took
name.
It from.
Yeah. It was something like
and
that.
And it's funny because he did that, but it associated it with him with being evil.
Right. When he was warding it. Yeah, exactly.
So anything supernatural, man, really can't, like those Conjuring movies. You know, people say they're cheesy, but
I liked them.
I love anything having to do with that. And then of course I'm that meme that I watch those movies and then I put on cartoons because I'm fucking terrified. I'm 52 years old. I'll turn on all the lights.
I love when a newer horror movie actually scares me though.
Yeah,
that's it doesn't happen too frequently, but yeah. I like when I actually get the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, I've heard this new Evil Dead movie is really good.
Is it a sequel to the last remake?
It's a sequel, but I think it's almost like a. I haven't seen it, but my kid saw it twice already.
Oh,
and he's like, it's the best one.
Because I liked the last remake with the girl.
Yeah.
It was like a lady's lead instead of Ash, mm-hmm. right? If I'm remembering it.
Yeah, this one came out maybe a month ago.
Yeah, all right, then I'm not familiar. Yeah. I got to check it out. Cool.
Yeah. But it did really well at the bottom. That kind of shit, too. I Spit on Your Grave, shit like
right,
that.
Right, right, right.
You know what? To me, a really good remake was The Hills Have Eyes.
I didn't see the remake.
The original was, you know, creeped me out. And that's another fear is like being broke down and then fucking, when you talked about X-Files earlier, that episode Home.
Yeah, that's the greatest episode of the entire catalog.
Dude, that one creeped me out more than any of them.
That is hands down. What's the best X-Files episode? That's number Home, one and everything else comes after.
Yeah.
It's also the first and I believe only episode of the entire series to get a parental warning when it aired before.
Yeah.
And I have a very unique story. I remember the night that aired very quickly. I met someone very significant in my life that night. And I recorded it on TV that night. I used to record them
on VHS
off Fox 5, you know, no commercials. Pause when the commercial break hit. I wasn't wasting my tape on commercials, you know. I remember very specifically the night that episode aired and just being completely floored by how grotesque and brutally awesome the whole thing was.
Yeah.
It just went real dark.
So I have a really good friend back home named Ray, and he told me about Home. I didn't watch it when it first aired. And he's like, you need to watch mm-hmm. this one. So we went over his house. He had it on tape. He did the whole, like, we're going to turn off the lights. We're going to watch this. And I remember saying, dude, I'm just going to hang out here tonight. I'm not driving home. Same thing. We went to see, he and I went to see In the Mouth of Madness.
Oh, yeah. Sam Neill.
In the Mouth of Madness. And we were leaving the theater and we somehow walked out of the back of the theater to this, like, it was like an alley and he takes off running. I've always been a pussy when it comes to scary movies. And anyway, he drops me off at my house, and my best friend Javier came over, and I'm like, hey, dude, you should just hang out with me tonight. Just spend the night. I have finally had to break down to him. Like, dude, I am fucking terrified right now.
You should just hang out,
I am,
man.
Terrified. Like, man, I love horror movies. I love them. I love, you know, I can't get enough of it, but I'm that guy to be like, oh, shit.
Well, I like them for the same reason. Like, at the end, it makes me feel
you.
Something.
It should scare you, know? You, like, right? Like, why make a horror movie if it's not going
to
scare you?
Yeah, that's the point, you know, to feel the extremes, both, you know what I mean, one way or the other. I need to correct myself. It might have been the original Sleepaway Camp. I don't know that it was Sleepaway Camp 2. I'm now confused. I'm second-guessing myself.
I think that ending scene was the original.
No, it's the original, right?
The original.
Yeah, that's what I. That's why I needed to correct that.
You guys want to know about it? Go watch Sleepaway Camp. We're not going to give away the ending.
No, I'm not giving that away.
But it will still fuck you up.
No, that will. I mean, that's also. I mean, in the canon of like 80s classic horror, Sleepaway Camp. It should be watched anyway.
Yeah. You know, there was a movie that came out several years ago called The Mothman Prophecies. Did you watch that?
You know, with Richard Gere, right?
I think it was Richard Gere. Yeah, he played the But, you know, they have a Mothman festival.
In West Virginia. Yeah. So the book, The Mothman Prophecies, is a great book that I read a couple years ago. Again, I read it when I was a kid, but it's written by Roger Keane, I want to say, is the author. And back in the day, in the 50s and the 60s, he was like, at the time when ufology was still like in its infancy, he was like on it. He lived in New York, and at the time of the Mothman sightings in West Virginia, I think it was like late 60s, early 70s or something, right? He was going up and down to West Virginia back and forth to write on these sightings because they were seeing this like giant winged creature with these giant
Eyes. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how much they go into it in the movie. I'm probably like telling you everything.
No, they do. They go into it.
But he was the first, he drew a corollary between UFO encounters and cryptid encounters, which is like not a lot of people like to draw the correlation because it kind of weirdly enough, Bigfoot people think it invalidates Bigfoot and UFO people think it invalidates Bigfoot. Yeah. They both happen in conjunction, you know?
Yeah.
But it's really just high strangeness and paranormality. But the greatest thing about, again, I think it's Keane, I need to remember, but he wrote another book about ultra-terrestrials, which is the idea that visitation, or what we know of as UFOs, is actually interdimensional beings and interdimensional travel.
Okay.
You know, moving backwards and forwards through dimensions to either gain information, tell it, whatever it is. But I like the idea that theory, I like the idea of that theory over nuts and bolts UFOs sometimes.
Yeah.
So sorry, I went down
on a
tangent.
I talked to a guy named Lyle Blackburn. You know Lyle Blackburn?
No.
So Lyle Blackburn's, he's a cryptologist. And so he does all these studies on Bigfoots and the Boggy Creek Monster and Skinwalkers and so forth. And I interviewed him on this show.
I got to listen to that one too.
Dude, he's so interesting. And I asked him, he's like, well, what scares you?
And he's a great question.
He's like, humans scare me.
And that's the right answer.
You know, like he goes, I'm when I'm out doing research, I'm not worried about finding Bigfoot. I'm worried about a meth head coming to fucking cut my throat.
Yeah, right.
But no, man, all this stuff is so, to me, interesting to meet somebody and talk about it. Just like earlier when I was asking you about wrestling, like I could talk about wrestling all day. I could talk about boxing all day. I could talk about horror movies all day.
If I'm into something, I'll wax about it. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm into something, I'm also into it. You know what I mean? I'm not like typically not into something casually, you know? So it's nice to connect. And I have found that in our thing, when we meet people, I do meet more people that have those specific weirdo interests too, whether it be sci-fi, horror movies, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, wrestling. They're in our world a little more than they are in probably the stock market.
Exactly. Not going to tell you what the fiscal year numbers are, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
I can tell you who directed and wrote the last Conjuring movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, you know, the second one happened in Enfield, England. It's the most recorded poltergeist ever recorded was... they call it the Enfield Poltergeist. And when we were there, I went and saw the apartment is still there, you know, their houses, but they're like projects.
Yeah.
And up until recently, the original furniture was still in there. Cause when people move out, people move in there, they leave the furniture. It's like furnished building,
right? Furnished row houses.
Yeah. And so it was all still the same.
Wow.
And that's a really interesting story. If you ever want to get into that, the Enfield poltergeist, you know.
I know of it, but I don't know too much about it.
So I'm all that shit. Amityville Horror, you know, really messed. I love horror movies like Friday the 13th, Halloween, which by the way, the reboot of Halloween was great, I thought.
I liked all three.
Yeah.
I mean, the last one, I know the last one got a lot of heat, but I liked it.
I think the last one got a lot of heat from people who don't understand what they were trying to do with
I'll give you that one, Bernie. Well done. Well said.
Yeah. Don't you think?
Yeah.
Fuck, there's not enough Michael in there. But, you know, they were doing something different. And yeah, you really get it. If you get what they were doing, then you get it.
Yeah. I love all the ones with Mike, but like, I also love the weird three.
Season of the Witch
is arguably the best one in the franchise. It is nowhere to be found. No. So. I like when they veer from it, you know, and what sold me on that movie was the opening 10 minutes.
Yeah.
That was fucking sick.
Yeah.
Not expected.
No, and it's, like I was going to say, like if you get a glass of water, you're going to see Godzilla glasses and fucking Halloween pint glasses, you know?
You a picture of all my coffee cups are either fucking aliens, Bigfoot, or, you know, Thin Lizzy.
Right.
Those are your options.
Have you been to Ireland yet? Have you been to Ireland?
I've been to Ireland a lot.
Have you been to the Phil Lynott statue?
I went. So my parents immigrated in 77. We went, and I was born in 81. So I went back a lot as a kid. I went back in May last year for the first time in probably like 10 or 12 years for a wedding. And I got back to the Phil Lynott statue. And there's a bar there, Brussels. Brussels?
Yeah. Dude, it was my social media profile picture for years. That's me standing in front of
Brussels. Fuck yes. So Brussels was like, so 2000, summer of 2000, I was kind of off the deep end. And my parents sent me to live a summer in Dublin. And they thought.
Dublin?
Yeah, I know.
because I know your history.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, you know my history. Yeah, so the thinking was is there's no dry goods for me to get my hands on in Dublin, so to speak. You know what I mean? Yeah. No, you know, I could only there's only liquid libation.
Yeah.
And I would be living with some family, and I'd be able to. But needless to say, it didn't go according to plan. But I spent most of my time at Brussels and was very familiar with that Phil Lynott statue and the history there.
Yeah, the first time I went to Ireland, I went looking for it and it wasn't there. And then I met a couple that I became really good friends with, and I asked them about it, and they said, yeah, some tourists came and knocked it down and broke it in half.
Fuck.
So I had to get it repaired. So I went back 2 years later and it was there. And that was one of my pilgrimages.
Yeah, it's still there. I got another picture with it in May.
You got to. Right?
Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah, I mean, and Thin Lizzy's they're top of the heap for me.
Oh, man.
You know, that's
nice.
That's
Black
my shit.
Rose.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Thin Lizzy, man. We were talking about that on this UK tour. I'm trying to remember who our new front of house guy is a huge Thin Lizzy fan. And I tell him, I was like, Cowboy Song is the greatest opening riff ever, you know?
Yeah. Or and then the song right after that, Emerald, too, has just that... Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, that just... deep cuts, too, like Under Pressure.
Yeah.
Or anything off Chinatown.
Yeah.
Like, those records are fucking great.
I saw them several years ago. They were touring together with John Sykes, was playing guitar and singing.
Mm-hmm.
He played in Thin Lizzy for a minute with Phil and Scott Gorham. I think he replaced Gary Moore.
Yeah.
But then they toured as Thin Lizzy, and they put out this live album called One Night Only, man.
Yeah.
It's real creepy how much he sounds like Phil.
I haven't listened to it. I've seen it.
Yeah, and it's real creepy how much John Sykes of Whitesnake and Murder and all that shit. But... No, man, I Thin Lizzy's another one. I love a lot of
The Pressure Will Blow. That's the tune. Yeah. Not Under Pressure. The Pressure Will Blow.
Under Pressure is that's Vanilla Ice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might be right.
That was that 80s hit.
Yeah. It's in that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie.
Right. Go ninja. God. But man, so I find that people like us who are into horror, who are into UFOs, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, that's fine. Works for me.
We also dabble in wrestling, but another thing is Bill Hicks.
Oh yeah, I saw the figurine on the
all the books. I got all.
I didn't
the books
even see the books, but when you were showing me the office, I clocked that one immediately.
So the same guy that made the Bernie figure made me that figure too.
Nice.
I mean, right off the bat, I tell people I just watched American, his documentary again. The other day, and
is that a newer one or anything? I don't know that I've seen anything new on him.
Kevin Booth, who was his best friend, Kevin Booth, wrote this book called Agent of Evolution, which is the Bill Hicks story, and it was only released in the UK. You can't get that book anywhere anymore for less than $300-$400.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I. Everyone.
When
I've
was it
up,
published? Like, is it newer or is it?
No,
from,
it's older.
Okay.
So I have American Scream, which is like the unauthorized biography.
That one I've heard of. Yeah.
And then American Agent of Evolution is really like Kevin Booth, his best friend, writing it. And he did this documentary about Bill, and it's just so in-depth and it's so good. But I was introduced to Bill Hicks by his brother. I used to work at a record store in Corsicana, Texas.
Like Bill Hicks's brother?
Yeah, and he was our like... I don't know which is the guy that the district manager or the regional manager who handles like a whole area manager of stores. And he was the area manager for this company, Western Distribution, who owned Hastings Music. Wow. And he came in one day, like doing his tour of all the stores. And he said, how do the comedy records do? And I said, I do okay. And he goes, my brother's a comedian. And he told me it was Bill Hicks. And I took home Dangerous that day, and I listened to it, and my life was changed.
That's
after
fucking
that.
Wild. That's how you got
brother,
turned
yeah.
up.
And I've, you know, that's how I got introduced to him. He said my brother is this comedian, and since then, man, I've just been.
That's a crazy intro.
Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I haven't read or. I mean, there was a period of time where I got real when I first got exposed to him. You know what I mean? And I got like really into like. But it's been a minute; haven't really dove in or read too much.
It's funny, man.
If
you go back and listen to it, like I used to have all this shit on CD. You can get all on YouTube now. Sane Man.
Yeah.
All that stuff. If you watch it, you listen to it, you think, God damn, he's talking about everything that's going on.
Well, that's
now.
The problem. That inevitably, Bernie, it becomes like fucking depressing for me because I say this about like all the woke shit and everything that goes on, like, or just the media at large, or like I listened to the lyrics in 1995 when I first heard him, man.
Yeah,
like I listened to what Bill Hicks had to say when I first heard it.
Yep.
So it translates to 25 years later, I would still be holding on to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like the idea that so much of this stuff that we're talking about is new or revolutionary, it's all there. So,
no.
And also it's been there and was talked about before Bill Hicks.
Yeah.
You know, it's all just repeating itself anyway. Yeah. But that guy specifically and a lot of the stuff that I got turned on to around that same time period.
Yeah.
Man, I took it seriously then and I still do.
Yeah, you should take that book home and check it out.
I will.
Agent of Evolution.
I will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll let you check it out. I just happen to be in a very fortunate position to get my hands on one. Like I said, you can't get that book anymore. It was never published here in the US.
Is there anything in that book that or was there anything about Hicks or that you have discovered that sort of like shed some light on stuff that wouldn't have been out there and like the sort of, I mean, cause I can't remember anything specific I've seen, read or learned.
No, like I think everything's specials, out there. You know? Yeah. Everything's out there now about him. I hear like, Marc Maron talking about him every now and then. Like Marc Maron spent a little time.
You like Marc Maron?
I do. I think he's sometimes, I mean, I'm a fan of his, of how outspoken he is, but at the same time, not, what's the word? I like him.
Man. I haven't listened to him in years. And I enjoyed it. Yeah. I got a little, bored of his shtick.
Yeah. Soul Patch. And you know, the whole, like not letting somebody finish an answer. And
I'm a cool sober guy.
Yeah. He still talks about the soberness now, but you know,
I appreciate as a guy that, you know what I mean,
I
has
think,
the history I have.
Yeah, and I think now though, you know, I think like right in the fucking guts of the pandemic, you know, his girlfriend died.
Oh,
suddenly.
Very unfamiliar with him, anything recent.
And
of
you
his,
hear so. How he changed his whole outview. Like he still talks about being the cool sober guy, but not as much. But now he's very much awakened.
Oh, interesting.
You know?
Yeah. No, I liked what the guy had to say. I just it became kind of one note. And I became more about him than the guest.
Yeah.
When I was listening to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I listened to a you know, like I said, during that time when we had nothing else to do, I dove into Marc Maron a lot. I went back and tried to listen to as much of his stuff. But Hicks, man, like, he was, you know, maybe he wasn't supposed to be around longer than 93.
I don't know. It's guys like him or like
I hear him in a lot of current comedians, and I think they take it and to try and be like a very shocking.
Interestingly enough, I think that's a generational thing too. Like, I hear what you're saying about like current, and I think it's almost like it's like a facsimile, it's like a Xeroxed version.
Exactly.
You know? I love Hicks, but you could say the same thing about Hicks and Lenny Bruce.
Exactly.
You know, and it's really just that shoulders of giants Isaac Newton thing, right? Yeah. Like, there'd be no Hicks without obviously Carlin and Lenny Bruce. And when you go back and, you know, I mean, Lenny Bruce was, you go back, like, by today's standards, like, it's not funny. It's not like yuck funny. It's like really intelligent. It's like really cerebral, you know. And then you take a guy like Carlin that takes that cerebral stuff and gives it like a sardonic edge and makes it more palatable. And then Bill Hicks, who really, in my opinion, blasted it into like an educational format.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Go into it with the whole, my favorite line, and I stole it from him and I use it a lot. Like when he goes into these tirades and just, and then he ends up and he's just like, I'm available for children's parties, by the way. That's such a Hicks thing.
You know what? But the thing about Bill Hicks was that, like, he there was a level of confidence and like conviction, in what he thought, and his worldview. That's what I responded to, like, first and foremost. He was so convicted of what he was. He was so convicted in that what he thought what was right for him was truly right for him. That it didn't matter that it was right for anyone else. And that allows him or anyone that subscribes to that the ability to let everyone live the way that they want to live.
Yeah. Exactly. 100%. But yeah, that's my dude right there. You know? I forgot that you did see the figure in the room. Stand next to me.
Yes, I clocked it immediately. Yeah. Because, like, I mean, you see shit that, you know, I immediately gravitate towards the things I gravitate towards too.
Yeah, man, that's it. Yeah, you'll have to take that. Check it out.
For sure.
I don't know if you've read American Scream, but...
No, I haven't read either of them.
Yeah. And Love All the People, that's like that's basically his rant in A minor act on paper.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I've seen that.
Man... For the longest time, I lived my life by what Bill Hicks said. It wasn't very popular with people, but...
Well, what ruffle felt like, what specifically would be something?
I think what he was, you know, in the beginning, when I first heard him, I had never heard that type of comedy. I hadn't been introduced to Carlin.
Yeah, right.
Or I think that's what, like, when you listen to a band, you're like, oh, we were influenced by these guys. Then you go back. So I think what Bill Hicks, to me at that time, at that age, was hitting the nerve that... He was talking about a lot of the same things that frustrated me and a lot of things that I saw, the hypocrisy. Like I said, I grew up very religious, but I'd see these things in the church that I knew were wrong. They would just, don't tell anybody I did that, or don't tell anybody we do that. Yeah. You know, and I'd see things at home that, like, you know, when they say dance on Saturday, kneel on Sunday. Yeah, some shit like that.
And it's interesting, right? When you see one guy with a microphone on a stage being really loud, saying all those things you're thinking, really kind of sets off a switch when you're of a certain age, you know?
Same thing with records, man. Like, these, you listen to records and you're like, goddamn, like, these are my thoughts. These are the people, you know, Sabbath, you know? Like,
I wrote a short story in like eighth grade about the first time I heard Black Sabbath and how it changed my life. You know, we had to do a fucking short story about something that changed your life. And I fucking wrote about my cousin putting on some Black Sabbath tape in the front seat of his Pontiac, you know, and me hearing it for the first time in the back seat and going, what is this? And that was that.
Yeah.
See you later. I'm downhill since.
I'm talking to a guy next week. Guy that I worked with, he was on this tour and we just started talking. He asked me for some pics for his kid. He was on our lighting crew. His stepdad was Jeff Nichols, who was Sabbath's keyboard player for years.
Sick.
And he's telling me, he's like, I'm going, you know, he passed away a couple of years ago. He's just now going through everything. He's like, you wouldn't believe some of the shit I found.
Oh my God.
You know, he's like, and he's going to, we're going to talk about Jeff in a couple of weeks, but he's just like, Bernie, you got to, he goes, I wish we had a day off near so I could take you home and show you.
Where is it?
He lives in London, but yeah, he's,
yeah,
to me, I was like, I'm drooling.
That's
you know? All he had to do was say the name Jeff Nichols, and I'm like, from Black Sabbath. Mm. And then he asked me, he's like, you got to tell me what kind of Sabbath fan you are before you can finish. So I was like, Ozzy. It's like, I love Dio, but it shouldn't have been called Sabbath. I love Tony Martin.
Come on, Bernie.
But I was like,
stop.
But
we're going to have this
like,
conversation.
No.
You know, I'm not going to let you get away with that on tape and not interject. Oh,
No. And then we started talking, and then he kind of said something to me that made sense and kind of clicked for me, because I've always, when people say like, Dio Sabbath is better than Ozzy, I always say, without Ozzy Sabbath, there would be no Dio Sabbath. I respect Heaven and Hell, Mob Rules.
Yeah.
Dude, those are two of their best albums. Probably better than the last two albums that Ozzy Sabbath did. You know? But that he said they didn't want to use the Sabbath name. They were just, their management and record label said, you have to use it.
Of course. You know? Marketing machine. You know? Because if they had just decided to make it a new band, they started from ground zero and, you know, marketing and everything else. So.
And Ozzy was fortunate that he was able to do it with Sabbath, you know?
Right. Look, I'm fucking obsessed with all the Ozzy records. I grew up on Master of Reality and Volume 4. Those were the ones that I, like, obviously the first, you know, Paranoid and the self-titled. But Master of Reality and Volume 4 were, like, my shit. But I do prefer the Dio Sabbath records more now. And once I was exposed to Mob Rules and Heaven and Hell, I did. I think part of it is because also Master of Reality and Volume 4 were beaten into my head so much through no fault of anyone's but my own, you know, that I just, the tracks got worn a little bit.
Yeah.
But there's something about Mob Rules and Heaven and Hell. Those are my two probably favorite Sabbath records.
Yeah. I mean, you're in good company with a lot of my friends. You know, I was just that weird Sabbath kid.
Oh, my buddy Darren, you know, we have this conversation once every couple months. I know. Yeah.
You know, like, I'm that weird bit like, I'm a big fan of Ozzy's. I'm a huge fan. I was introduced to Ozzy before Sabbath, but Sabbath just became... But, I mean, look, I've got the Heaven and Hell signed by all four guys. You know, but the Dio stuff, like I said, those two Dio records are better than the last...
And honestly, like, if they were called, you know, Heaven and Hell, or if they were at the time when they were released, like, what it eventually sort of morphed into, like, I would like them probably... Yeah, I would like them just as much.
Yeah.
Personally. It's something about Tony and Dio.
Yeah.
To me, that's the Tony's Dio's melodies over Tony's riffs. That's the selling point.
And I think he brought more out of Tony.
Completely agree, because Technical Ecstasy does not sound like Mob Rules.
No.
Or Heaven and Hell. Like those two records are
I think Tony had a singer that really said, I got to step it up.
I think
with Ozzy, who's, you know, Ozzy's a chanter.
Yeah.
You know.
Totally.
Hey,
I saw an interview with, I think it was Geezer or Bill, talking about singing over the melody rather than singing to the melody. And like, that was the simplified version of the difference between Ozzy and Dio. So Dio sing over the melody and Ozzy sang to it.
Yeah. When I turn this recorder off, I'll tell you a story that Gary told me. That
love it.
I promised him. He can't talk about it, but he told me, but I'll tell you about it. But man, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, it's
dude.
Been a fucking blast.
Dude, I prefer doing it like this more than anything.
I can't imagine doing it any other way. So.
I know, right?
Yeah, this is so seemed to flow. Anyway,
dude, I met you several years ago. You've always been a stand-up dude. That's why, you know, even during the pandemic, I texted you. I was like, hey, fucking come to Texas if you don't want to be around.
Yeah, you did. You did.
Dude, I
knew you meant it.
You know, you're, I hate that term ride or die, but I know you're one of those, dude, that I appreciate. One more question, dude. It's called Is Breakfast Included? And if it was included, what would you have?
Black coffee and a camel.
Right on. That's a first.
There you go.
All right, brother. Good talking to you.
Right on, Connor Hickey. I told you it was a pretty cool conversation. I mean, I thought it was cool. And if I think it's cool, it's pretty much cool. Anyway, guys, don't forget, go to our Big Cartel store is breakfast.bigcartel.com. We got some pictures this week of folks who bought shirts. Thank you. Thank you. And if you've bought a shirt, hey, send us a picture or tag us in a photo on the socials. Also go to oldbonestherapy.com, place any order, use the discount code breakfast and get 15% off. All right, guys, I am done. Have a great day and I'll talk to you next week.